The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. The Premier League, lots of fun at the Emirates as Arsenal and Spurs both play well and badly at the same time in a 2-2 draw. Chelsea and Manchester United also drop points in the race for which of the top six can fall out of the top six. Above them, Manchester City and Liverpool's procession continues, while Leicester and Crystal Palace are in the top four. Palace because of some controversial un-VAR-related refereeing in the last minute at home to Villa. Elsewhere, Leicester are good, West Ham might be good, and Everton show Wolves just what it takes to win the Everton Cup. Celtic win the Old Firm, there's a thriller between Juve and Napoli, and two goals and two yellow cards for Gareth Bale in Spain. We'll do that, round up the Football League and the rest of Europe, answer your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. Jonathan Wilson, nice to see you.
You too.
Have you had a fun morning? You've been complaining about public transport already.
Yeah, it wasn't great. Thankfully, I'd set off 2 hours early because I was meeting somebody.
Okay.
So that meeting was curtailed. I still finished the crossword, though. We got that done.
Cryptic or quick?
Cryptic.
Okay. I'm still on quick and failed to finish it. Barney Ronay.
Hi, how are you? How are you,
everyone? It's nice to see you. It's been a while.
I've been around and about a lot this summer.
Yeah, you look like you've got a healthy glow about you.
Thanks. Is that in a good way?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Not in a sort of Dale Winton way.
I don't think he's looking too healthy these days.
No, I should have picked out a permanent
Mickey Gray,
who is still alive. It's Mickey good. Gray, yes.
Very good friend of Graham Souness, wasn't he?
The best mates, in fact, yeah.
Dale Winton and Graham Souness,
I know,
were best mates.
Yeah.
Were they?
Yeah.
Where did they meet? Aisle 7. Barry.
Oh, hello, yes.
Nice to see
Sorry,
you.
Sorry, I interjected there before you'd introduced me. But I would imagine that's probably the last thing I'll get to say in today's pod once the other two guests start bickering.
Well, they were both at the Emirates, so I've got some questions for them before. I will come to you, Barry, at some point.
Oh, I'm happy to take a back seat and let the lads do the heavy lifting.
Okay, marvellous. Arsenal 2, Spurs 2. What a fun game of football. By the end, just two teams counter-attacking with seemingly no midfield whatsoever. Jonathan, in your piece today, you said it was thrilling, but was it any good?
Well, it was loads of fun. In fact, the whole day was fun. The two games were like incredible spectacles. But you also saw why none of those four teams have a chance of winning the league. I mean, I don't think Everton or Wolves thought they had a chance of winning the league. But yeah, you have to be able to control the game at some point. It was... Yesterday, the Northland derby was ridiculous. I mean, it was loads of fun. I sort of enjoyed it, but...
What did you want to happen? You wanted Spurs to shut up shop at 2-0?
It doesn't even have to be the shut up shop. It shows some sign of being able to control the ball and control the tempo of the game. But this is just... the whole thing was transitions.
Well, I think that's... slightly undue negativity. I mean, there was a pattern to the game, and there was a what happened was one team. I mean, yeah, it was, there was some comedy defending. We all saw the moment when the first half, about 20 minutes gone, when Son again on the break, finding huge amounts of space, when David Luiz did that funny thing. He literally turned and ran away. And you don't often hear laughter at a football match. Like, people were laughing. He turned and ran. It was like an amazing attacking run towards his own defence, but Son didn't pick him out. And there were moments like that in those first 20 minutes. But I thought what happened after that is Arsenal midfield played pretty well and got close to Christian Eriksen and stopped him from finding all that space. And something happened in the game that was somebody asserting some control, which stopped the other team from dominating. So I don't think it was total chaos. A thing happened. And that was tactics, some tactics. I don't know if you picked that up in your tactics piece.
I mean, I think you're being over generous there. I think Tottenham just looked knackered second half, as much as anything else.
Well, they often are. I mean, what was interesting, Eriksen is obviously now hopefully staying, unless Real Madrid can somehow get hold of him in the next 6 hours. Tottenham's squad is really quite thin in terms of real quality.
Well, apparently they've done 5 double training sessions already this season. There's sort of a theory that Pochettino's been so sort of frustrated with everything he's taken out on his own squad, which may benefit them later in the season, but I think it significantly cost them the last sort of 25 minutes yesterday.
Yeah, but they... whereas I thought Arsenal, there was some sign of some strength there. I mean, they should have won that game.
Yeah, they probably should have done in the end. And I agree with you that once Ceballos had come on, they did have a measure of control, whether they'd have had that if Spurs hadn't been exhausted. But they shouldn't have been given the chance to do that. Arsenal were so bad defensively in the first half.
They were bad defensively, and they had two goalkeeping errors, which led to goals. I mean, if, you know.
Well, and the keeper also made two great saves, and Kane hit the post in the second half. So Tottenham could have been out of sight, and probably should have been out of sight.
How are you, Baz?
I'm all right. Great. Thanks. Yeah.
You, Barney, wrote a piece about Christian Eriksen, about how important he is. And I was. Obviously, you can tell he's so vital to that team, but why is it that no other player can do the things that he can do? Because he's not amazingly quick. You know, his first touch is delightful. But what is it that he's doing that they can't replicate when he's not there?
Right, I mean, he's great, isn't he? He's such an unflashy, incredibly flash and talented player. He has an incredible ability to pass the ball at the right speed to the right player and to have an idea of what the best pass is. And he just, when he's settled into a game, you suddenly realise that everything's going through him and all the best little moments come from him. The pass before the pass is so often his pass. When he's not there, you really, really notice the absence.
And do you think there aren't that many players like that because it's more difficult than, say, being a flashy winger, or it's less exciting when you're a kid watching football, so you don't learn how to do that?
I wonder if you can really learn that skill. It seems to be a kind of personality thing, a character thing, or just the way you...
I think sort of having like a mental map of where everybody is, and sort of somehow being able to process the speeds at which they're all moving, so you know sort of instinctively where they'll be in a second's time or 5 seconds' time. And that's, yeah, I don't know if that can be learned. I guess if you have it, you can improve it. But I think just that capacity to visualise is really unusual and really difficult.
Did you ever listen to this thing on TalkSport? I happened to hear it last night when I was coming home.
Your mechanic been fiddling with the wireless again?
Yeah, somebody been messing with the dial. There's a thing where they get Gary Bloom to talk on the couch.
Oh, yes, I know.
And it's kind of interesting because I don't really... There's nothing on the couch about it. He basically just interviews people. But they had Ian Holloway on there, who's obviously a kind of... sort of, you know, interesting things going on. But he talks, he's sort of obsessed with talking about how insensitive football is. He decided this is the thing where you show your kind of human side. And he was talking about how brutal kids football is and how if you show any weakness, or certainly in the past, if you have any weakness coming through, you're deemed not up to it. And you do wonder about the kind of players English football has always produced. I mean, if you're... Christian Eriksen is small, not very quick, slightly frail. His genius is to be able to read the game around him in a way that isn't immediately clear and probably doesn't show in lower levels of football particularly. Mm. It's no great surprise that people like him just don't appear in English football.
Speaking of great subtlety, Granit Xhaka. Barry, that was a wonderful moment, wasn't it?
Well, again, I wasn't there, but I'd imagine there may well have been... laughter when that tackle went in as well as
last week I said that I didn't bother to look at the replay with the David Luiz shirt pull because it was just so blatant where I was 100 yards away. This time the tackle was so late that I had to look at the replay because I didn't see it because I was following the ball, and it was so late it was beyond my peripheral vision.
Right, the other Spurs players aren't appealing for it. If you look in the background from one angle, they're all following the ball, but Xhaka had other ideas.
And it's, you know, not uncharacteristic behaviour from him. I was surprised that Danny Ceballos didn't start. And I think having him in would have been a better move than Mr. Xhaka, who is always good for a mistake like that. And Arsenal seem to have too many of those players who are always good for a mistake. You will get chances against Arsenal, and I'd imagine that's the reason Spurs sort of set up in this defensive manner they did, albeit a defensive manner which didn't really work very well.
Speaking of defensive mistakes, I can understand why teams try and play out from the back and try and keep the ball. But when you're 2-0 up and it's the last minute of the half, you know, Danny Rose has a chance to clear it. There was that appeal for a handball, which I think unsettled him. But also Davinson Sanchez has a chance to just boot it out. Yeah, I don't understand why at some point you just don't go, actually, let's just lump it and keep what we've got for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it looked on replays and things, but the impression I got in the same was that the Tottenham defence thought it was going to be a penalty. Like, you know, there's a sort of guilty lurch to Danny Rose's run, and it seemed to have completely scrambled his brain, that appeal. I haven't seen it back. I don't know. Have you seen the replay? Was it handball?
No, because they didn't show it, obviously, because they replayed the goal. Presumably Danny Rose by now should have realised that the referee was never... Nothing will ever be overturned, so he'd probably be
okay. Handballs might be, though, mightn't they? That's the oddness of the asymmetry of...
Were we getting close? Can I hear the hooves thundering? Is it coming? Are we about to get into it?
Not yet. Oh. It'll happen. Don't worry, buddy. It will happen.
I've got a VAR question I want to ask when we get round to VAR.
Okay, well, when
are you going to do your scenario?
I am. Were you there when I was playing myself?
You've got to hear the scenario. It takes a while. It may need some editing.
It takes a while. Let me look at producer Jonathan's eyes. We haven't even done one game yet. And we're in some fictitious scenarios.
The Wilson scenario.
Is it you are the ref?
It is. There might be an easy answer to it.
Wilson scenario sounds like a Frederick Forsyth.
Actually, that could be the title of my detective novels, couldn't it?
Slightly longer and with more twists.
I'll tell you what. Why don't we do that at the top of part two?
Something for people to look forward to.
Exactly right.
And easily edited out.
Yes.
So are we basically saying that this Arsenal-Spurs game, both teams will see it as a good result and both teams will see it as could have been a better result?
I think so.
I mean, ultimately, like, they've both dropped points, obviously. Chelsea have dropped points and Manchester United dropped points. So basically, we're back to...
Well, I think if you
where we were last season.
I mean, obviously, the fact that they're 2-0 up, it will be a frustration to them. But their record at the Emirates is terrible. Mm. They go into the international break having only won one of the first four games, but they've got away games at City and Arsenal out of the way. None of the teams they're competing with, so the other, you know, the third to sixth teams have looked any good at all. So given they've had a pretty rough start of the season, given... Yeah, the transfer window maybe hasn't quite worked out as they wanted, given Pochettino's fairly evident discontent. They've kind of got away with it, and they can reset over the international break and start again.
The game was a huge success. The North London Derby is not about either of these teams trying to win the Premier League. It's an economic unit. This is the most lucrative game in English football.
Is it?
Yes.
What about the playoff final and the Championship?
Well, no, that's not lucrative. That's sort of imagined money winning the... But in terms of the money it generates, and this was a brilliant game, it kept the whole legend of the thing going. Both teams would have made huge amounts of money from this game over the course of the season. It was a massive success.
Guendouzi had a good game, and that pass for Aubameyang's goal was brilliant, because we're talking about Eriksen's ability. That is something you've not really seen from Guendouzi too much, and it's inch perfect, and it had to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think he had an excellent game. It's odd that, so, you know, if you asked me this stage of last season, I'd have said Torreira was the absolute key to the midfield going forward, and their position seemed to reverse. Guendouzi now looks the more promising of the two.
Michael says, how many more times will Harry Kane get away with diving?
I don't really know. I mean, there's a lot of it about in the Premier League.
Do you think it was a dive? The thing in injury time?
I thought so, yeah.
I don't think it was a penalty, but I just sort of think he initiated the contact. He was trying to protect the ball, and he steps across. Who was the defender? It was
Socrates.
Socrates.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've changed. Someone's actually asked a question. Russell says lots of massive questions, but why have people changed the way they're pronouncing Greek defender Socrates to Socrates? I'm not sure which is correct, but one is correct. Either way, it was him. I think Harry Kane actually could have got a penalty if he'd just been less flamboyant in his fall. If he'd put his body in the way and then just crumpled rather than flicking his feet up.
He put his body in a place to be fouled, but wasn't fouled and then fell over, or was only slightly fouled.
Yeah, which sort of casts further doubt on the one he didn't get last week. It's just the same kind of action from Kane of stepping across the defender.
Producer Jonathan says if he dived better is what I'm suggesting here. Well, yes, it's an interesting...
We can't have honest English yeoman diving well.
You're absolutely right. At the end, Moussa Sissoko had a chance, didn't he?
Is it a chance if it's Moussa Sissoko near the end?
It's so bizarre, isn't it? Like, one day he will score and it'll be just so tremendous. Interesting that Pochettino picked Sanchez at right back with Aurier on the bench. I don't know what that's considering. Is it right Sanchez has never played right back ever?
In the post-match press conference, Pochettino said that they'd been watching him at Nacional and... been scouting with Nacional and he played on both sides. Well, I checked back through Nacional's formations And it's true he played at left back twice. I could find no evidence of him ever having played at right back. I looked through Colombia's youth teams and couldn't find any evidence of having played at right back. So I'm not saying it didn't happen, but I can't find any evidence of him ever having played anywhere other than centre back, twice at left back, and a couple of games in the middle of midfield.
It's good detective work, Detective Wilson.
I was about to say, that's why you're
I've done the background.
Maybe Aurea is short of fitness, but I thought Gary Neville...
Isn't there some talk that Aurea wants to leave and may well go today?
Possibly, yeah.
That may be why he was omitted.
I thought it was an interesting point that Gary Neville made on commentary about the amount of fitness you need to be a fullback compared to being a centre-back. Because you sort of presume all of these elite athletes at the same level. But it's true, even at amateur level, if you play centre-back, you barely sprint at all. If you play fullback, it's all you're doing.
Yeah, it's a different type of fitness, I guess. The centre-back's got to be fit to take sort of a physical battling, be able to jump. Whereas a fullback's got to be able to do regular sort of 30, 40-yard sprints.
Mkhitaryan is heading to Roma on a season-long loan with an option to buy. That Mkhitaryan Sanchez, I mean, it's quite an extraordinary
bad.
But amazing how badly it's gone, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot to sort of unpack there, as they say. I'd like to read a 10,000-word long read on exactly what and how and who. And I mean, I went to that first game Sanchez played at Yeovil. I remember writing that this is it. He's great. This is the man who's going to transform. I mean, have I ever made a worse call? Probably. But it's the most astonishingly terrible swap ever, or move ever. Has there been a worse?
Well, there's also, even leaving Sanchez out of it, there's a whole history of people leaving Borussia Dortmund and turning out to be not as good as they looked at Dortmund. So Niri Shaheen, the lad at United.
Kagawa.
What's his name? The German who scored in the World Cup final in 2014.
Goethe.
So this is like...
This is like a terrifying quiz suddenly.
But there's a similar thing in cycling where riders leave Team Sky and tend to not do as well at other teams.
I think people have theories about that, don't they?
People do have theories. I'm not suggesting that the practices at Sky and the practices at Borussia Dortmund are in any way related, because they're both totally different teams. That's just something that came to my mind.
Here's a good quote. For all the overblown schmozzle of Alexis Sanchez's long goodbye from Arsenal, the dizzyingly tedious debates over net cost, balance of the deal, the artfully shot piano-plonking video cut, one thing has remained unaltered. Sanchez is a wonderfully pure footballer, a multi-millionaire athlete who, as Jose Mourinho said before kickoff at Huish Park, really does just love to kick a ball around. Barney Ronne there.
Well, I think that history has borne me out there.
In the Champions League draw, Spurs, the only English side in Pot B, they got Bayern Munich from Pot A, Olympiacos and Red Star Belgrade. It's not a terrible draw, that, Wilson, is it?
No, it's fine. I mean, it kind of doesn't really matter who... As long as you don't get two good teams, it's fine. I mean, the draw's so... The whole thing looks so dull.
It was a very depressing draw, because suddenly people were talking about groups of death, simply because the group had some teams in it who were quite good. I mean, it was an example of how degraded the competition is at the moment. I mean, these early stages are kind of pointless.
I looked through, I had to do like a prediction thing, which two teams would go through, and I looked through other people's, and essentially, there was one or two differences, but basically 14 of the 16, everybody had the same. Maybe there will be shocks, but when there's sort of, everybody just expects the same teams to go through, you can't even see where shocks may be. It's all a bit depressing.
Barry, did you like Eric Cantona's little chat?
I can't decide whether he's an attention-seeking buffoon or a philosophical genius, but anything that livens up...
Exclusive?
Pardon?
Are they mutually exclusive?
Well, that is true. Anything that livens up...
The Greek philosopher Socrates was a famous attention seeker.
Cantona sees himself as a kind of situationist. He's going into the most controlled, ludicrous, corporate, horrible environment and trying to make it feel really weird. I mean, it's a very sort of French thing. He's trying to make you feel really strange and uncomfortable.
Ronaldo's face was great.
Yeah, but that was the whole point, was to say something so weird and odd.
I was just wondering what the producers were saying in Reshmin and the other chap's ears.
Pedro,
as it's happening, because every part of me would be, I'd want to unpick that. I'd be like, Eric, Can you just run that by me one more time? They say, just move on, as if he said, thanks for the award. I'd like to thank my family. The Champions League is great. All the best. Goodbye. That's what I was... That was my whole takeaway from that. But anyway, that was Eric Cantona. Arsenal in the Europa League have been drawn against Eintracht Frankfurt, Standard Liège and Vitória. So have fun on your Thursdays. Chelsea 2, Sheffield United 2. Barry, you think Sheffield United could and should have won this game?
I do, yeah. I think they were a bit cowed in the first half. And I suspect Chris Wilder gave a rallying, stirring cri de coeur at halftime, and they were vastly improved in the second half. The goals they conceded were the back of silly mistakes that could easily have been avoided, and on balance of play, I can see why Wilder was delighted to come away from Stamford Bridge with a point, but I would say on reflection he might possibly be thinking, yeah, we could have won that game. I wasn't particularly convinced by Chelsea. I haven't been at all, really.
They're badly exposed when Kante's not there, aren't they?
Yeah.
I won't name the person, but there's somebody was talking about how modern football is all about transitions, and he said the easy transition is defence to attack, the hard transition is attack to defence. And his suggestion was that there's a whole category of players of a certain generation who sort of missed out on that phase, and Lampard's one of them. And so, yeah, they've never had to learn it. And they know, yeah, if you go to coaching school, you're taught it. If you're a slightly younger player, it'll be taught you as, you know, as a natural part of your education. But Lampard's slightly too old for that, and he, you know, never did it in games. You know, he was always kind of a player who was much better going forward than coming back. And it appears that his Chelsea team are incredibly bad at that side of the game.
Surely it's run back really fast.
Yeah, but at the right time, the right position.
Okay. Is there any more detail to it at all?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to... Yeah, you know, it's got to be coherent as to, you know, who go, you know, when you press and when you drop, and, you know, who goes, and, you know, where you take up the defensive line. I mean, you know, all these things are kind of quite simple in your basic conception, but it's the details that make you brilliant at it.
I'm not suggesting that's a simplistic analysis in any way, but I mean, just because he didn't play in that position, I mean, he played with, you know, Claude Makélélé, for example.
Yeah, but he had Makélélé to do it, so he never bothered to work out what it was. So he just sort of thinks, I'll stick Kante there, and that'll do.
He'd have to be uniquely incurious, kind of...
He's an English footballer, Barney.
To not be aware that the man standing pretty much 20 yards from him is doing that job to an incredibly high standard, and to be grateful for his work at doing it.
I mean, maybe Lampard was just so shocked whenever he got the ball in an attacking position. He had idea.
You'd think that, and yet Lampard and Gerrard never worked out a way of playing together.
Did they not?
Yeah, his whole style of play, it was as though he was completely unaware that side of the game existed. His whole management so far, it's as though he's unaware that side of the game exists.
Chelsea's defence has been pretty chaotic. I mean, under his watch.
They've just played two of promoted sides in the first four games. They've had two of their, you know, at least theoretically easiest games of the season. One of them may scrape a 3-2 win. One of them may lose a 2-goal lead and draw 2-2. They've had four goals in those two games.
Well, I mean, there is a chance that he's just a very inexperienced manager, generally, rather than someone who has this sort of fatal flaw of only looking for...
I think you've got to learn to trust your judgment, but just leap in there, as you did so correctly on Alexis Sanchez.
Yeah, well.
It's what Maverick detectives do.
I thought I wasn't Maverick.
Oh, yeah, you're not Maverick. But, you know, stories can change. Like you say, Barry.
I've got to learn to embrace my Maverick side.
Like you say, Barry, Sheffield United, instant impact after half-time.
I was talking to Tony Evans last night, and he was at that game, and he was saying you'd almost see the moment at around 35 minutes when this collective realisation settles on Sheffield United that, hang on, this lot aren't any good. And then obviously second half, they really go for it. I mean, it was, what, 40, 45 seconds or something when they get their first goal back?
And a fully Irish goal, Barry. Ender Stevens and a tidy finish from Callum O'Robinson, born in Northampton, played every England youth level, Tony Cascarino of modern times.
I didn't even realise he was an Irish international.
No, you're right. There's no reason you'd know. He's only got eight international caps.
Oh, has he?
Mm.
Oh, right. I'm surprised I missed that.
His name's Callum O. Robinson.
No, I added the O.
Oh,
no.
Right.
Max being racist.
That would be illogical, wouldn't it? Because O means of, and you would be saying son of Robin.
Yeah, absolutely
like
right.
Like Mook. Or
you could be...
Oh, grandson.
Grandson of Robin.
Robinsonino.
Robinsonino-ino. Robinson... Yeah.
It was the youngest Chelsea 11 in the Premier League era. They've been drawn with Ajax, Valencia and Lille in the group stages.
That's a mildly interesting draw.
Mm.
I think Lille would be rubbish because they've lost all the good players. But the other two can definitely potentially upset Chelsea.
Disappointingly but unsurprisingly, Kurt Zouma, the latest player to be racially abused online... Frank Lampard confirmed Chelsea intend to meet with some of the social media platforms to help try and stamp the abuse out. Presumably we're getting us to a stage, and this is beyond football, isn't it, where everybody has to be verified, right?
Well, it's easier said than done, because when a big company like a social media firm or Instagram or Twitter or whoever get your personal information, I mean, that's what people are suggesting is you should have to provide... a copy of your driving license or your passport, you know, they can't be trusted with that kind of information, can they? So,
the problem is as well that unless all social media companies accept this,
yeah,
you know, the one that doesn't is always going to be more popular because people don't want to give that information. But I mean, what I don't get with this, and I just don't know the answer to this, is it actually a lot of people or is it?
Well, that's the point. I mean, there's two things we're saying about it. First, it would be very easy to police this and stop it from happening. You just don't allow people to use certain words. You know, they control this entire system. How hard would it be to create an algorithm? Anyway, and the second point is, do we really need to talk about this?
Well, that was a question I was going to ask.
Because there's definitely journalists on Twitter, as soon as there's an own goal or a missed penalty or something, they search for it. And then they show screenshots of the results of their search. And I maybe it is a big problem. I don't know. Maybe it is a tiny handful who
can make a big noise, right?
Yeah. But it becomes a celebrity story driven by a small group of really horrible people who essentially are trying to create a story. There are loads of real structural issues to do with racism, to do with, you know, the much wider... that probably deserve this attention... and not a small group of 16-year-old morons who are being gleefully searched up on Twitter by journalists. I don't know. I mean, I'm not the world's expert on this, but there's some part of me that feels that it kind of isn't helping to become very excited about...
Yeah, no, it's an interesting point.
I do feel slightly uneasy about the fact that say, a black player makes a mistake, misses a penalty, scores an own goal, the first thing certain people are doing is... well, A, racially abusing them, and B, people typing in their name and certain words in the search engine to see what comes up. It just doesn't sit well with me, really.
No. I mean, I think we all don't really know what the best thing to do about it is.
At the same time, obviously, we shouldn't cover it up.
Yes,
but
exactly.
I'm not really certain what the right answer to it is. But
the story is, this anonymous bloke is an idiot. Like, is that a story that we should be discussing?
I don't know. But I think they're valid questions. Back on the pitch, Southampton 1, Manchester United 1. What does this tell us about Manchester United, Barry?
I think it tells us that they're probably at best a work in progress and at worst not particularly good. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has a very big job on his hands. We all knew that already. Whether or not he'll be given the time to do it remains to be seen. He seems to have unearthed a gem in Daniel James. Paul Pogba spent almost the entire first half giving the ball away with alarming frequency. And I'm not sure it tells us a great deal we didn't know before the game started. Maybe just confirmed what we already kind of thought.
3-4 for Daniel James. It's a great finish, isn't it? Because normally people bend that one in the corner. He just wazzocked it. didn't he?
Yeah, it was really fun. It looked like really fun scoring that goal. It's the sort of goal you try and score in the back garden. I mean, he's exactly the kind of player. Basically, the one good job Solskjaer can do for that club is sort of what he's begun to do, is get rid of loads of people and then get rid of himself. Because, I mean, he's part of that same thing of his obsession with the recent past and comparing everything to the recent past. They really need to just burn everything back to the bare stubble, and then ideally get rid of the owners, maybe move the ground.
Change their name.
Change the name of the club. But really, it's just less and less. Cut it back. Get rid of it. Chuck it all out.
Wan-Bissaka was impressive as well. And he puts a tackle. He doesn't just stand up. It was Sofiane Boufal, who isn't necessarily the most productive, but still quite a fun player.
Well, you say that. I think
he made 10 tackles against Southampton.
His dribbling stats last season were incredible. I think his dribbling stats in terms of percentage of attempted dribbles completed were higher than Messi's last season.
Boufal?
Yeah, I think so.
Really? But anyway, Wan-Bissaka ahead of Kyle Walker in the England squad. Thoughts? Because Kyle Walker looked like he started the season quite incredibly.
Well, I mean, you never know, but I really hope Southgate's had a chat to Kyle Walker and said, look, we just want to have a look at Wan-Bissaka. Don't worry, you're still kind of very much... I believe he did have that chat
with him.
In which case, I'm sure Kyle Walker's quite happy not to have to bother playing Bulgaria and Kosovo.
True. The big Nordic / Danish head of Yannick Vestergaard against Lindelof. I was wondering, has there ever been a header contested between two players that was so obviously going to be won by one of those players? Anyway, it was quite a fun header, wasn't it? In the Europa League draw, Man United got drawn with Partizan Belgrade and AZ Alkmaar, as well as the prospect of a 6,000-mile trip, a round trip to Astana in Kazakhstan. So Manchester United have to travel to Kazakhstan, 4,786 kilometres. Sevilla go to Azerbaijan, 4,764 kilometres. Getafe go to Krasnodar, 3,482 kilometres. And Copenhagen get drawn against Malmo, 28 kilometres. Everton 3, Wolves 2. Sixth home win in a row now for Everton in the Premier League. Seems to me, Jonathan, like these are two sides, especially Everton, who like to get it wide and get crosses into the box, which is unlike quite a lot of teams.
Yeah. It's almost like David Moyes never left. I thought it was a really odd game yesterday. I couldn't work out any pattern to it at all. Every time I looked up from my desk, there was a goal going in.
That's the interesting thing about Marco Silva teams. It often seems to be complete chaos, which is kind of at odds with his touchline persona, which is of a man staring intently at the play as though manipulating every fine detail.
But then the other strange thing is that there's not even a consistency of inconsistency, in that before last week they kept 10 clean sheets in 13 games, I think, and yet, you know, they look pretty ropey defending. A bit unlucky to lose, I thought, against Villa, but defensively they weren't good, and then they let in another two yesterday.
I think Everton looked quite good and quite fun.
Mm. And I think they're definitely fun, yeah.
I hadn't twigged that he had Luis Boamorte with him as well until I watched that game on telly in midweek, which is really good. I really like him. He's one of my favourite players. I used to sort of see
him... He used to foul a lot, didn't
yes,
he?
Yes, yeah. But I used to see him around. I remember seeing him in the park playing football on his own while he was playing for Fulham. He was in Holland Park just doing keep-ups and fitness and sort of running up and down.
During the season?
Yeah, during the season. He used to go and do little sessions on his own in the park with near loads of kids playing and things.
That's tremendous.
And I saw him in the lift at Covent Garden another time. And we're getting in the lift and thinking, oh, it's Luis Boamorte. And he sort of looked at me and he saw that I knew it was him. And then loads of other people got in the lift. And we were sort of stuck for quite a long time. It didn't move. And the whole time we were eyeballing each other across the lift. And he was thinking, he's going to say you're Luis. Because he was sort of quite a big star at the time. But I didn't say a word. And after a while, he realised I wasn't going to say, and there was a kind of mutual
respect.
Yeah, something passed between us, which was, okay, fine, cool.
I think he was thinking, that's that weirdo who keeps spying me on me from the bushes in Holland Park.
One of the reasons Everton are maybe so open is they just don't have a holding midfielder now, because they've sold Gay and Gabamon's injured.
Isn't Delph doing that? I heard Delph play quite
well
yesterday.
Yeah, but he's a sort of, he's more of a box-to-box than somebody who just sits there as Gay used to.
Perhaps he's just too late in that era to understand that you need to track back.
I think it's certainly true. He's a slightly old fashioned type of midfielder, which is fine. I mean,
what's amazing about that theory is that I never played football beyond, you know, university level. But I know that. And I've never played as a top flight midfielder at all. But I know that you have to track back. I mean, you think someone would have told Lampard, said, Frank, you know, when you're running forward, all those blokes behind you, they're doing this sort of defensive sort of thing. Or you might have accidentally seen it on television.
All these things are true. And I think what makes it particularly frustrating is that, you know, Lampard, you know, he has his Latin GCSE. He's obviously a man who can learn things. And yet his entire career suggests that he didn't. His career as a player, and now I would argue is,
yeah. Perhaps if Makalele,
this is not just a thing with Chelsea. Look at Derby in the Championship last season. Derby conceded a great proportion of goals on the counter attack last season than any other team in the Championship. These are just facts, Barney.
But isn't Lampard an example of a player who made the most of his? You know, he really has applied his brain to making the most of exactly what he can do. He's not running around.
And we're seeing the limitations of that right now, I would suggest.
He has a tattoo which says, always look forward, never look back.
I bet you if he got in his car, he's probably taped over all the mirrors.
He doesn't even know they're there. What are those things for? There's a weird...
He's driving along. He's driving along the motorway. There's just carnage behind him. All these accidents.
Lord Makalele just picking people up, putting them in the back, taking them to hospital.
No reverse gear on his gear stick.
What does that R even stand for?
His driving test, he failed on the 3-point turn because he couldn't do reverse.
On a slightly different note, Graham Souness has come under a fair bit of stick for his sort of quite cliched criticism of Moise Kean. I don't know if any... Jacob was quite angry with him on Twitter, saying, I wonder if it ever occurs to a rich old white man, Graham Souness, how problematic it is to have an innocent, baseless muse on live television about whether a young black footballer has a troublesome character. So tone-deaf, so complacent in this climate, you have to realise that words have an impact. Souness was trying to say, you've got to ask why Juventus sold him, which is not an illegitimate question.
I think it is a pertinent question and one that crossed my mind at the time, but there appears to be no evidence whatsoever to suggest that Keane's professionalism should be called into question. I was having a scout around today to see if there was that I was unaware of, bar him and another fella being late for a couple of sessions at Italy under 21 duty, there was nothing. And then of course there was the incident last season where was it Giorgio Chiellini criticised him for quite, he was quite within his rights to stand up for himself while being racially abused, but Juventus didn't really back him.
Mm. And neither did Serie A. Yeah.
It's quite possible Keane wanted to leave and you wouldn't particularly blame him. That was a really unpleasant experience. Maybe he won. The problem with Souness is not necessarily who's talking about who. It was completely based on nothing.
Yeah. I mean,
he even admitted he didn't. Often people say things like that and imply they have some wider knowledge, which they may well do. But he openly admitted he's got nothing to base this on. But in my opinion, maybe this lad's got something wrong with his character. And it just sounded really like something dark and old and basically bullshit from the 1980s.
Yeah, Jacob's tweet continues. If you're talking about Moise Kean, it probably helps to know that he was racially abused in Italy last season. Maybe not the best idea to start wondering about his character on live TV. After making it through the three Europa League qualifying rounds, Wolves have been drawn in a group with Braga, Beşiktaş and Slovan Bratislava for their first European campaign since 1980.
I think if you're a Wolves fan, that's actually a really nice draw. You've got three interesting cities to go to.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all, I mean, maybe Braga not so much, but the other two are sort of famous names in European football. In Istanbul, Bratislava and Braga are a good, you know, good place to go. It's what you want as a Wolves fan, I think.
Producer Jonathan, there's an amazing stadium at Braga.
Yeah, with the quarry face at one end.
Oh, yes. Oh, tremendous.
I mean, the new Beşiktaş Stadium is, you know, it's a beautiful location right on the Bosphorus, and it's got these... like the old stadium, part of it was listed because it's this sort of very classical front where it goes onto the water, and they've sort of built the arena behind that. It's a really, I mean, it's a new ground, but it's a very striking looking ground.
Mm, tremendous. Well, look, that'll do for part one. Part two will begin with the Wilson scenario. Welcome to part two, the Guardian Football Weekly live shows, 10th of September. Me, Barry, you, Lars Sivertsen and Jonathan Wilson. You, Wilson. Manchester, come along, please. And then 10 days later in Leeds, me, Barry Wilson and Faye Carruthers come to that as well. Right, before we get on to Liverpool and Manchester City's easy victories, the Wilson scenario.
Okay, so this came about because it worries me the asymmetric liability of a handball law now. So handball is different for defenders and forwards, right? Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we haven't got onto the scenario. This is deep background on the scenario. Just
so here is the scenario. I'm playing against Barry. Our okay. teams are playing each other. Mm-hmm. I'm 1-0 up. It's late in the game. Barry seems pressing. The ball's pumped into the box.
I don't think Barry's got the fitness to press that late.
And there's a shot from, you know, 18 inches away that smacks into my arm. But there's no way I can get out of the way. My hand's in a natural position. Not a penalty. The ball drops at my feet. I punt it 80 yards forward. The ball bounces. And Jamie Vardy's playing up front for me, much as he did on the Saturday. Hits the bouncing ball first time and scores. So the third last touch was off my hand. So is that in the build-up to the goal? Because if it is, the goal can't be stand. And you've got to give it as a handball defence, which is in the box. It's suddenly a penalty. So therefore, the right thing for Jamie Vardy to do is to miss. Because by scoring the goal, he's conceding a penalty.
It's a great scenario. He's so good. It's like the detective at the end of Death in Paradise. That's genius. And in fact, I asked that question to Neil Swarbrick.
Did you?
I did, because what was the handball?
What, are you saying you came up with the Wilson scenario before Wilson did?
Well, because when the Man City goal was chalked off, Gabriel Jesus' goal was chalked off, and it hit Otamendi. Was it Otamendi's
Laporte,
hand? Laporte's hand. I asked him, I said, what happens if that hits Oliver Skipp's hand and then the ball goes upfield and Spurs score? But I didn't. What I didn't do was mentally work out how it would be sensible for them not to score. So right. So I asked the question, but I hadn't been as intelligent. Well, he basically said it's going to be very unlikely, isn't it, that...
Well, it's not that unlikely. I mean, the scenario... I mean, look, it's unlikely, but... It's completely
also
unlikely things happen in football matches every day.
It doesn't require like a seagull to catch the ball and carry it or something.
True.
It's like a man can kick a ball 70 yards, a man can then kick that dropping ball.
But it's also very unlikely that any team now will defend with a high line against Jamie Vardy.
We were saying
perhaps on Saturday.
We said that all season and Leicester won the league.
It's a very good point, and I will go back to Stockley Park and find out. Burnley 0, Liverpool 3. I don't know what you think, Barney. I watched this and I thought Burnley were toe-to-toe with Liverpool for about 20, 30 minutes, and it sort of epitomises what you can do against Liverpool and sometimes against City is you can keep up with them for a bit of a football match, but football matches are too long for opposition teams now.
Yeah, and this was the... non-rapacious Liverpool. This was the slightly more patient version because they can't play like that all the time. But the front three are just so good, and they will eventually score. I mean, there was an interesting moment with Mane and Salah, which everybody kind of laughed off. But I thought that was quite interesting. You don't see that very often.
John Henderson's face, yes, he hadn't seen it very often.
Yes, he was shocked, wasn't he? It was a really good face. It was a really authentic human response to that. Oh, no, don't do that.
And then Milner, you know, doing the senior pro thing, going and sitting next to Mane and putting an arm around him and calming him down. But which, you know, that side of it suggests the squad dynamic is actually very good.
Yes. But I mean, Salah is he's an unusual player. He plays in odd rhythms and odd patterns and makes some odd choices at times. It's part of his brilliance. And obviously at that point, he's... massively annoyed Mane, but I think it was a slightly odd moment.
Isn't the beauty of all of this is that Firmino links it all together because he's the unselfish of the three, right?
That seems to be the thing everybody says.
But he also wasn't passed to in a great position by Salah. Mm. I mean, maybe he just doesn't care. He's like, oh, 3-0 up, so what? But
he's an incredible player. I mean, he's invented that a way of playing or been helped to invent a way of playing. His sort of that, he's got that one move he does, the kind of capoeira grab, where he pulls the ball out of the air, coming back, and on the turn, and brings it down. So I've never seen another footballer do, and it's really key to the way they play, because he'll then lay it off. I think he's fantastic.
On Friday, Liverpool were drawn with Napoli, Salzburg and Genk in the Champions League group stages. So they're through. Manchester City 4, Brighton 0. Graham Potter set up Brighton with a back three to try and deal with Man City, and then Kevin De Bruyne scored after 2 minutes. Thoughts on Potter's approach?
Well, I suppose it's like the Mike Tyson thing. Everyone has a plan till they get a punch in the mouth, and that punch in the mouth didn't take long coming up. I would see this game as a kind of free swing for Brighton. I think they were on a hiding to nothing and probably would have got tonked whatever way they played. There's no shame in losing to City. I thought Pep Guardiola's praise of Brighton's approach afterwards was a little bit patronising. He perhaps didn't mean it to sound patronising, but it did. But yeah, I mean, it's just another routine win for City by a large number of goals to no goals.
I mean, they had a couple of chances, Brighton, didn't they? Neil Maupay having them, and Trossard as well. But you have to literally take everything. Literally everything has to work perfectly for you if you're going to get anything. A bit like Spurs at City, right? You know, everything had to drop.
Yeah, I mean, City, they've become that kind of late Guardiola team now, haven't they? Where their season's just going to boil down to a few key moments, probably in the spring. And they'll run through games like this. But I thought one interesting thing was, even though they were brilliant last year, Kevin De Bruyne was really up and down and in and out. And he is fit now. And I think he's the best player in the Premier League. And quite what he can do this season will actually be that's a slightly different note in that team.
I married a report's injury. It was a bad foul, wasn't it, on Adam Webster. Guardiola expects him to be out for a while. So by my reckoning, City have only got Otamendi and Stones, who isn't fully fit yet. And it doesn't seem sort of Fernandinho can do that job. It seems quite naive of a club with the resources of a whole country to not have cover.
But they couldn't afford cover, Max. Didn't you hear Guardiola? When he was asked why they didn't sign Harry Maguire, he said,
"Oh yes,
we can't afford him." Hmm. And we all wept in sympathy, the poor church mice of Manchester City.
But isn't that strange? Is it strange?
Well, it's both strange and it's potentially very damaging to them. It's not going to matter in games against the likes of Brighton, where they'll have so much of the ball and they're not going to be tested defensively and they can probably afford letting a goal or two every game. But the problem City have had is when teams break their press, they have looked vulnerable anyway, and Laporte's probably their best defender, you know, in the side. So you lose that, and so suddenly you think they're really vulnerable. So I mean, if he's not back, I think they play Liverpool in October, don't they? Late October, early November, maybe. If he's not back by then, then you know that's good news for Liverpool.
Well, I'd say that. By the looks of things, he could be out for the season. But the thing is, Fernandinho can probably do a job there. Kyle Walker can probably do a job there. And Pep does have a previous in the field of turning non-central defenders into very accomplished central defenders. So I wouldn't panic too much. But it is certainly an injury he could have done without.
Aguero goes one ahead of Sterling and Pukki in the goal-scoring charts. Two superb finishes from him. And Brighton's Florian Andone seems to be on the brink of a loan move to Galatasaray, meaning that his last act in English football might be that ludicrous red card he got against Southampton. In the Champions League, City have got Shakhtar Donetsk, Dinamo Zagreb and Atalanta in their group. To the King Power, Leicester 3, Bournemouth 1. Do we think Leicester are the team with the best chance of breaking into the top six, maybe top four?
Yeah, and they're brilliant to watch, aren't they? I love watching Leicester. I mean, I love Jamie Vardy as a footballer. He's just an absolute force of nature, isn't he? I love the way he runs. I love his glee. I love the way he takes penalties and the sheer sort of joy in running around.
Well, the rage when he scores as well is fun, isn't it?
Brilliant, isn't it? I'd like to kind of be Jamie Vardy for an afternoon. Doesn't it look so much fun?
I mentioned it during.
What would you do?
Oh, yeah, good questions.
Well, I'd do what Jamie Vardy does. I'd run around. I'd score brilliant goals. I'd hope to take a penalty. I'd close people down rapaciously.
So you'd like
even
to be...
if you were just out of the shops.
Yeah, I'd do that. Yeah, I'd run around Sainsbury's. Like, I'd be a blur. I'd wear one of the. I liked him best when he had that sort of wrist thing on.
Yeah,
and he looked like his sort of a kind of lost child abandoned at a bus stop, running around. Off his head on Diet Coke, and you know, I mean, he just He's great fun to watch.
Would you run around the aisles at Waitrose, buy a whole set of shopping, and then with your shopping, run up to the Tesco till and cup your hand to your ear?
Yeah, with a trolley full of Skittles and vodka.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned it during Wilson's scenario, but what are Bournemouth doing for Vardy's goal? I mean, Ramsdale is in the middle of nowhere, but why are they defending with such a high line? I mean, it's madness.
It is, and yeah, you know, I think we're sort of beginning to see the limitations of Eddie Howe for, you know, brilliant as he's done. Bournemouth cannot defend away from home, and it's you know, that just seems to be a perennial problem. They don't seem to have got any better at it. I mean, yeah, maybe to do with limitations of budget, but you sort of think they'd have found at least a way of trying to ameliorate that.
3 minutes later, Ryan Fraser slid it to Callum Wilson for the equaliser. The Fraser-Wilson combo, the most common in the Premier League last season, happening seven times. VAR, Barney, excited. Tielemans scored just before half-time, 10 minutes after half-time, went over the top of the ball, trod on Callum Wilson's ankle. On Match of the Day, Jermaine Genius and Tim Cahill both said it wasn't clear and obvious.
Tim Cahill's probably a slightly vested interest in not going in too hard on these things. I mean, it was clearly a bad foul. I mean, I didn't really understand that. I watched that as well and thought, well...
I don't understand how clear and obvious a mistake has to be for VAR to finally go, I think you should change your mind.
Has VAR actually changed anything this season if it's not an offside or a handball?
I don't know. I can't remember one.
I mean, you know, I know we haven't got onto it yet, but the Allaire penalty for West Ham.
Yeah, don't know why that's obvious. Not. Just a penalty, yes.
And it's kind of like we've created a situation where the ball brushes a hair on your arm and stops a goal being scored. You can stamp on somebody's ankle and shatter it into 18 pieces. I know that Tielemans didn't do that, but might have done. Mm. And if a ref's sort of going, it didn't look that bad. It's fine.
Essentially, Stockley Park is just it's just a coffee afternoon for referees who don't have a game. And then occasionally someone says, I've made a decision, and they go, yeah, we confirm you made it.
But, I mean, it's clearly a bad... The whole thing is just bad, isn't it? I mean, if we're really going to talk about this... I mean, I
love how Barney claims to hate talking about VAR, but has been champing at the bit since we started.
I just like, I know it's there. It's like that one of those like marital arguments. You just got to get it out. There. Okay, it's right. Just clear the air.
It's cathartic, right?
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, I started.
I hate you. I wish you were dead, wife.
That's how I started off with. I was instinctively hostile towards the idea of VAR. I just thought this is gonna be terrible. We'll be talking about refereeing all the time. And then I realised there was this ideological opposition where people were saying, well, look, we need to move on. This is new. It's gone off of clarity. It became a kind of old fogies versus, you know, maybe younger people who wanted to embrace something new and hear different cliches to the cliches that old people talk about. And I was kind of open to that idea and thought, okay, maybe I'm wrong. And then the third stage of that is, no, it absolutely is totally hopeless. And at what point can you say an idea is so bad that you... I was watching Dragon's Den the other day, which my kids like watching, and there was a guy on there who...
It's not the Malaysian man who made Max cry, is it?
Oh, no.
Oh, you're with his spicy sauce. That really made me... That made me weep.
Well, they do make you weep. The general thing is, an idea comes in, you go, that's quite a good idea, and it's going really well, and then Peter Jones will say, well, hang on, what about your turnover? And they suddenly there's a cut to shock faces. And, well, I'm out. This doesn't... And you think, my God, this completely collapsed. And then someone will make an offer at the end, and it's all okay. But this guy had he'd invented a pasta straw.
Oh, yes, and from one.
The pasta straw, yeah. to replace plastic. But making the pasta straw would involve so much carbon and so, you know, just a completely ridiculous idea. But they had him going on about his pasta straw.
It's when they say, how much of your own money have you invested? They go, £20 million.
Yeah, he'd invested so much money in a pasta straw. But
VR, so it's like just a really long fizzily.
Yeah, which is going to save the world from, but takes a lot of carbon to make.
But, surely when you put pasta in water...
Yeah, don't use it with your cup of tea. but this guy's obsessed with the pasta. He's going to keep going with the pasta straw, even though everybody said this...
He'll show Tuca Silliman.
Yeah, well, indeed, yeah. Or Supplements Supremo, whatever his name is.
So you're saying that VAR is the plastic straw.
Well, at what point do we acknowledge we're dealing with a pasta straw?
Well, we can't because... here's the thing... the trouble is, because everyone's got a smartphone, and when there is a howler, people in the ground know that the ref's made a howler.
But the howler thing is fine. We can have this for how the, you know, the thing where someone's punched someone in the face off the ball, or yeah, or it's clear, you know, something really obvious.
Something clear and obvious.
No, not clear and obvious. Okay. Outrageously
okay,
obvious.
Right.
So the kind of thing that happens once every five games.
So that's what's happening now, because nothing's been so clear and obvious that it's fine.
The problem is because of the technology is so expensive, because there's so much, it's so heavy, because we're so involved, because people in their mad fevered brains imagine that marginal points of, you know, subjectivity are clear and obvious, that we have to have intervention. Actually, not having intervention is a good idea, but we now expect it. It just doesn't work. It can't work.
Well, okay. I mean, surely even the staunchest advocates for VAR didn't imagine a world in which the Gabriel Jesus goal is ruled out, but Allaire does not get a penalty for that.
Yeah. Anyway, I tend to agree with you, Barney. We shouldn't spend this whole time talking about referees and VAR. Crystal Palace 1, Aston Villa.
I haven't finished.
Aston Villa 0. Kevin Friend blows the whistle for a dive by Jack Grealish that wasn't a dive. It was a pass, and Henry Lansbury scores, but no goal. Barney.
Well, this was the worst thing that's ever happened. Yeah. I mean, it's just a... at that moment, Grealish has got so many things happening in his head. He's tired. He's at the end of the game. He's running forward. He's dodged inside to a tiny little bit of space. He can see a player approaching. He can see his player over there. He's processing all these decisions of what to do, how to avoid being kicked, because he gets fouled more than any other player. He produces a brilliant bit of play where he actually nudges the ball sideways while he's about to collide with someone else. He's thinking, I'm going to get hit. I've got to get the ball over there. He jumps forward, avoiding contact as he does it. He's done a brilliant bit of play. And what happens is the referee says, you're a cheat. All you were thinking about there was conning me, and you're a cheat. I mean, it's just wrong and awful. And, you know, the whole thing should be stopped and abandoned. The game should have been stopped. And Kevin Friend really needs to have a look at himself.
Yeah, I mean, now he has got VAR. He could have just waited, couldn't he, just for a couple of seconds.
Well, actually, that's an interesting point with the asymmetry as well, because if he'd allowed play to continue, the dive, if he thought it was a dive, the dive would have had to be clear and obvious for that to be called as a dive. Mm.
Pasta straws.
And then the other asymmetry is that obviously him blowing the whistle means that that's it. You can't sort of unblow the whistle. But him not blowing the whistle, there's at least a theoretical possibility of going back and virtually blowing it and backdating the blowing of the virtual whistle.
I remember the Watford reserve keeper was on Dragon's Den once.
What?
Yeah, that's right, with baseball caps.
Yes, correct. Yeah. And he got money.
Yeah.
How did that work out? Does he now have...
He invented the baseball cap.
Did he? Did he have a patent pending in Europe? Surely someone else.
Well, what was the idea? Because it was something to do with baseball caps.
What's his name? Richard or something Foster?
Richard Wright?
Richard Lee.
I saw this one as well. His idea was to have a shop that only sells baseball.
Yeah. And Theo Pafitis, who was at the time, I think, owner of Millwall, was on one of the Dragons, and he couldn't get his head around the fact that a professional footballer with a Premier League, I think they were in the Premier League at the time, had the brass neck to come in looking for a handout to set up a shop only selling baseball
caps. But they thought this was a really good idea. And I'm pretty sure
they got money off somebody.
Yeah. But we don't know how they're doing now. Somebody let us know, please. West Ham 2, Norwich 0. West Ham looks really impressive, Jonathan, which is sort of surprising.
Well, I sort of expected them to be quite impressive, because I thought I thought Allaire was the missing piece of the jigsaw. But then it was West Ham, so I sort of unexpected my expectation. But I think that combination of Allaire as a sort of focal point up front with Yarmolenko and Felipe Anderson, I think that works. You know, I thought in theory it worked really well, and in practice it appears to be working really well. Although Yarmolenko committed a horrendous dive that he got away with.
But he is a great player, Yarmolenko, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And his goal was really well taken.
Lovely finish. And he's a great player. Berbatov is not the right comparison, but he's a player that isn't fast, but it doesn't seem
really
to matter.
Strong. He's a really big man.
But just sort of dribbles past people slowly, which is fun.
Yeah, okay. I mean, the game when West Ham won at Everton last year, I think it was West Ham's first win last year, and he was brilliant in that game. I think he scored twice and he got the injury soon afterwards. I'm glad he's back for him. His reaction of running over to the medical staff who'd helped him get through it, yeah, I think that was very... some of the least apt high fives you'll ever see, but it was a very touching moment.
I saw a tweet from a Norwich fan in the ground saying, Norwich wearing their away kit actually makes it more difficult for us to differentiate between these two teams. It was a disgrace, wasn't it? Dr. Cap, everybody. He wanted £150,000 for a 20% stake in his business, Dr. Cap. He got £150,000 for 50% from... Does anybody want to guess which dragon gave him the money?
It's such a bizarre idea.
It wasn't Deborah Meaden. It wasn't lifestyle. What has she made her money in? Sort of leisure activities in the West Country, I always think.
Swingers parties or something?
She's done very well, whatever it
is. Duncan Bannatyne?
Correct, Duncan Bannatyne.
Get in.
Well done. One more game in the Premier League. Newcastle won, Watford won. First point of the season for Watford.
Should have been three, though, because it was... VAR weirdly decided not to notice a really obvious handball by Isaac Hayden in the build of Newcastle's goal.
Yeah.
Which would not have been a handball in any reasonable world, but we don't live in a reasonable world anymore. So
we live in the world of pasta straws.
It was also Newcastle's lowest attendance for a long, long time. I think about 44,000, which seemed slightly odd considering they won their last game and it was a stirring win over...
They hate winning, Barry. That's
Tottenham Hotspur away from home.
You know, there's all this sort of moaning, we haven't won a competition since the first cup 50 years ago. They don't like winning. They don't turn up when they win games.
Do they dislike winning because it sort of takes away from their argument that Mike Ashley is a terrible man?
I think they probably do like winning. I was being facetious.
Yeah.
In the Football League, Swansea top of the Championship after beating Leeds 1-0 at Elland Road. Wayne Routledge, he has wonderful eyes, by the way. Should have a look at them. Scoring the only goals.
If you had to have an eye transplant, would you get his or Juventus? Or Wayne Rooney's. Wayne Rooney's got surprisingly nice eyes.
I've never studied his eyes.
He does. Yeah. He has beautiful baby blue eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Their Routledge's are piercing, honestly. His only goal of the game was the last minute as well, so Leeds dropped to third.
Leeds are doing what they did last season, aren't they?
They're burning out already.
Well, they're battering teams and can't score goals. if they had a circa 1985 John Aldridge, they'd already won the Championship.
All right. Charlton move into second with a 2-0 win at Reading, which is very impressive from Lee Bowyer's men. Along with Swansea and Charlton, West Brom remain unbeaten. They beat Blackburn 3-2, all five goals in the first half. Birmingham, when it's 3-2 at half-time, it is never 6-4, is it? Birmingham came back from behind to beat Stoke 2-1. Stoke really struggling. The winning goal was scored by a 16-year-old, Jude Bellingham, playing in just his third senior game, becomes the youngest goal scorer in English football since Jordan Ibe scored for Wickham against Sheffield Wednesday in October 2011, a month short of his 16th birthday. Barney, you were at Millwall 1, Hull 1. Did you have a nice time?
No.
That's all right.
Well, it was just one of those games where nothing seemed good. Nothing really worked. It was quite exciting at the end. Hull ended up with 9 players because they'd used all their subs and then someone got injured and then someone got sent off. But Kamil Gwizdicki was playing and I kind of felt really sorry for him. He's a really good player.
Mm.
And
do you think he was having an existential... Because it sounded like you were having an existential crisis. Do you think you both were together?
Well, he seemed to be playing in a different world to everyone else. And eventually any kind of world where what he does makes sense kind of disappear completely. It was just a fight. It was quite exciting at the end and a good point.
In League One, now cut to 23 teams after Bury's expulsion. Bolton lost 5-0 for the third game in a row. It was Gillingham's turn to run up a score on the young sides, who still have just 6 senior players. Keith Hill has taken over as manager with David Flitcroft as his assistant. They've worked together before and they were both born in Bolton. Ipswich stay top with a 3-0 win over Shrewsbury. Lincoln move into second after beating Fleetwood 2-0. And Sunderland, how could you, lost 3-0 at Peterborough, going down to 9 men.
Yeah, I think if you're going to have 2 men sent off, it might as well be, you might as well do it when you're already 3-0 down.
Yeah, why not?
At least we could take that crumb of comfort from a disastrous game.
In League Two, Exeter stay top with a 1-0 win over Mansfield. Newport and Crewe stay 2 points behind them with wins over Forest Green Rovers and Bradford, respectively. Cambridge lost 1-0 at Port Vale, thanks to an own goal in the 84th minute. Mid-table mediocrity. Footbar, Barry?
Footbar.
The old firm.
Yeah, it wasn't a very good one.
Oh.
They generally tend to be... you know, quite chaotic affairs, like, say, the Arsenal-Tottenham game. But this one, Rangers were at home. Lots of people were expecting them to win. Most of the focus was on them in the build-up, as Neil Lennon whinged at great length about after the game. And they just didn't turn up. And they were second best in pretty much every department and lost 2-0 and probably could have lost by considerably more.
I know it was whinging, but it was quite funny whinging, pointing at a Sky promo going, I feel like Brooks Koepka here.
Yeah.
Like, it's very pointed. It's like, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, well, there was a Sky promo of the game in the build-up to the game, which featured Steven Gerrard, but didn't feature Neil Lennon, and he got the right hump over that.
Oh, really?
And in his post-match press conference, I mean, there's very little to say about the game because Celtic were just...
I mean, Rangers might have been tight. Rangers had that Thursday night game where they'd won in the last minute, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. But you would expect them to rouse themselves for the Old Firm. But yeah, Neil Lennon was both managers seemed particularly unhappy after the game.
That's good though, isn't it? All I want from these occasions is somebody running down a touchline, punching the air slightly inappropriately in front of the... That's all I want. And that happened.
Yeah.
You don't want happiness and, you know... It's,
oh, no, well, I mean, the misery sort of seems to fuel this globally famous derby. But, yeah, Neil Lennon was moaning at the media for, you want us to fail. And I don't think anyone wants them to fail particularly. Just people want a title race. And it now looks like they're probably not going to get one. Steven Gerrard has been sort of criticised a bit, and he did say that he would accept responsibility for some of his team's shortcomings. His team selection was slightly odd in that he didn't play any wingers against a team whose weak spot is supposed to be its full backs. And he didn't start Alfredo Morelos, who, you know, is well known. He's a bit of a tinderbox or powder keg, so... he started Jermaine Defoe instead. And Morelos, for all his hot-headedness, he does have 10 goals to his name all season, so far this season. So,
would you rather be a tinderbox or a powder keg?
I think I'd rather be a powder keg.
Okay. You need a tinderbox, so otherwise you just...
a keg?
Just powder in a keg. I mean, I admit the tinderbox can't do much, but the two go together. It's a partnership.
They work together, unlike Lampard and Gerrard.
Rangers have been drawn against Porto, Young Boys and Feyenoord in their group. Celtic got Lazio, Rennes and Cluj. In the women's game, England drew 3-3 away at Belgium in their first game since the World Cup. Phil Neville said they might need to, quote, suffer more pain in training after being quite disappointed with the manner of the draw. They play Norway tomorrow in another friendly. Norway coming off the back of a 6-0 win in Northern Ireland in the UEFA Women's Championship qualifiers. Also in the qualifiers, Kim Little scored 5 as Scotland beat Cyprus 8-0 and Wales won 6-0 in the Faroe Islands. And that'll do for part two. We'll begin part three with Sid in Spain. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's start in Spain with Sid Lowe. Hey, Sid.
How are you?
Yeah, marvellous. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you.
Excellent news. So Atletico Madrid, the only side with 100% record, coming back from 2-0 down to beat Eibar with a last-minute winner.
Yeah, and it was pretty exciting as well. And of course, what it does, although Atletico, the fact that they were 2-0 down, of course, tells you that there were periods of the game when they weren't particularly good and defensively they looked surprisingly vulnerable. But it does suggest that they have some variety and some creativity, which we haven't always seen in the past, because when they really went for it, they did create a lot of chances. It's not like, obviously, you know, it's always a surprise when someone scores in the 90th minute, but it's not like that goal came out of the blue. They've been pushing and pushing, creating chances, and Atletico look really very strong. It's very early, and Simeone was very quick to say this post-game, but the early signs are pretty good for them.
And a top four... which does not contain Real Madrid or Barcelona.
Yeah, and obviously that's the other thing. I mean, look, obviously after three games, you can't start drawing conclusions. And as soon as you say, well, look at this, Madrid and Barcelona have already blown it. Of course, they haven't. But it's also true that those points, they can't get them back now. Atletico Madrid have a 5-point lead over Barcelona, a 4-point lead over Real Madrid. And I think as well, beyond just the points, there's also that sensation that you look at Real Madrid and they look a mess. You look at Barcelona, and all right, they were very, very good against Betis at home, but that's Betis at home, and they don't look right either. And I must admit, there's a bit of me that wonders if this whole pursuit of Neymar, despite the fact that they're almost certainly not going to get him, although, of course, in, what is it, 8 hours, 12 hours' time, that may well look a little foolish, is still going to do them damage. Because how do you not do damage to your players and your squad by this kind of pursuit, in particular when you've gone to Dembélé and basically said, please leave so we can bring Neymar in, when you've gone to Rakitic and said, please leave so we can bring Neymar in? You know, it damages things. And Valverde was very clear on this before the game at the weekend when they drew 2-2 with Osasuna. You know, he was asked on a scale of 0 to 10, how tired, how bored, how pissed off are you with all this Neymar stuff? And he said, well, pretty much a 9.5. He said, I want this over. And you know, that's not in itself an excuse. And of course, some of the underlying problems for Barcelona are much deeper than that. And we said it lots and lots of times last year that you know, Barcelona were a team that weren't always that functional, but they had Messi. And so, you know, they look like they've got problems at the moment.
And Real Madrid, quite a Gareth Bailey game for them.
Yeah, Gareth Bale scored twice and then got sent off for two yellow cards within the space of less than a minute, I think. And this is where I start to wonder if I'm either too English or too Spanish, because I'm too English in the sense that I thought they were both quite harsh, although actually the first one, it does look like he might follow through a little bit with his other foot. But maybe I'm too Spanish in the sense that I looked at them both and thought, well, yeah, they're both yellow cards.
Real Madrid in for Bruno Fernandes, do you think?
This was a comment, wasn't it, from, I think, the president of Napoli, was it? An Italian club, anyway, had been asked about a signing that he was due to make. And he said, well, Bruno Fernandes is going to Real Madrid. I must confess, I can't remember exactly what the connection was to their signings there. Real Madrid was saying that's not true. Zidane, in the press conference on Saturday, said, well, there could still be a bomber, you know, a bomb, an exciting explosion, something out of the blue that surprises you all on the final day. But to be honest with you, I suspect Zidane was just saying that because he had nothing else to say.
Looking at the Champions League groups, Real Madrid have got PSG, Bruges, Galatasaray, Atletico have Juve, Leverkusen, Lokomotiv Moscow. Barcelona have Dortmund, Inter Milan and Slavia Prague, and Valencia in with Chelsea, Ajax and Lille. How many of those Spanish sides will get through, do you reckon?
I think the most likely scenario is all of them do. That said, it's a lot harder for the Spanish teams than it has been for the English teams if you look at the draw. I think Barcelona could consider themselves very, very unfortunate, particularly because you have to look at it in the context of what was plausible. And so, you know, you look at the draw, Barcelona in that first pot, they got arguably the strongest team from the second pot, arguably the strongest team from the third pot. So in that sense, it's much, much harder than needed to be. I must admit, I can't bring myself to be excited by Paris Saint-Germain, and I'm not sure that they're the strongest team around. So I suspect that Real Madrid would go through, and it could have been better for Real Madrid, but I think it obviously could have been a lot worse as well, considering they were coming out of the second pot and were likely to get a very, very strong team. I think Valencia, given that they were not in a position of being seeded, won't feel that group is as bad as it might have been, and certainly not as bad as it was last year when, of course, they had Juventus and Manchester United. And they went away, I think it was to Young Boys, wasn't it, the other team in that group last year, and blew it away. So, I mean, it wasn't just the big teams, they blew it against the smaller one as well. But I still think if you look at those groups, you would probably still imagine that all of them will go through, although Valencia are on the verge of a massive crisis, and I think it might blow up today if Rodrigo departs, which he may well do.
And what will that crisis entail? Just him leaving, or is there a bigger...
Well, no. It's him leaving is really, if you like, a kind of a symbol for the breakdown now between the owner in Singapore and the people who were previously running the club from Valencia. In other words, Matteo Alemany, who's the kind of the chief executive, and Marcelino, who's the manager. They've had their wings clipped this summer, that the power in terms of signings goes back to Peter Lim, the owner, which essentially means goes into the hands of him and Jorge Mendes. And that has caused a huge amount of tension. And if you listen to Marcelino in press conferences, he's been very direct, very honest actually as well, very direct. And in a way, it's tempting, this might be a step too far, but it's tempting to listen to him talk, Marcelino, and read between the lines and think what he's really saying is, sack me then. Go on, sack me. Because earlier in the summer, there was the risk of that. They were summons to Singapore. Matteo Alemany kind of survived, Marcelino survived. But the breakdown is pretty much absolute now. Now, obviously, those cracks can be papered over if they continue to be successful, because bear in mind, last year, they won the Copa del Rey, which is their first title since, I think, 2008. They got into Champions League places. They were very, very good throughout the second half of the season, at least, beat Barcelona in the Copa del Rey final. It should have been the beginning of real stability. Instead, the summer saw everything kind of fall apart again.
So the door open for Gary Neville?
I think there is no one in Valencia, even the people who employed Neville, who want that to happen. And I don't think Neville wants that to happen either.
Oh, well. Anyway, Sid, thanks for your time.
Pleasure.
Take it easy, Sid Lowe. out in Spain. No Archie this week. All you need to know about the Bundesliga is that RB Leipzig are top, the only team with a 100% record after three games. They won 3-1 at Borussia Mönchengladbach. Timo Werner celebrating his new four-year contract with a hat-trick. That contract has a release clause of just 30 million euros, which is probably a key condition in the negotiation, so they don't lose him for free next summer. A shock result of the weekend saw Borussia Dortmund, having won their first two games emphatically, lose 3-1 at Union Berlin, the home side's first ever win in the top flight. Bayern went down 1-0 to Mainz in the 6th minute. Before winning 6-1 with six different goal scorers. Ivan Perisic scored his first goal for his new club and set one up too. Jonathan, you have an interesting Hamburg story.
Yeah, so they've got a Gambian midfielder called Bakary Jatta, or do they? They beat Nuremberg 4-0 last week. Nuremberg have since filed an official complaint saying he's not Bakary Jatta at all, but an entirely different player called Bakary Daffer.
Okay.
Hamburg say, no, he's got a passport. We absolutely trust he is who he says he is. Built in their report on it have looked into this Bakary Daffer, who vanishes mysteriously in 2015 from Kasaspor in Senegal at exactly the time Bakary Jatta appears in Germany. So yeah, who knows what the truth of it is, but it's a pretty weird story.
Sounds like a case for Detective Wilson. You've been too busy working out how many times Davinson Sanchez played right back to take on any more detective work, but one for you next week.
I might expand the agency.
Oh, how exciting.
I could get a sidekick.
Were you busy, Baz?
I'm your sidekick.
Oh, yes. Well,
you forgot about just sacked you, Barry.
I forgot about that.
Do you have the Macintosh thing and you just didn't see it coming? It's something boom.
From Germany to Italy now, Nicky Mandini's roundup as Napoli are involved in a second 4-3 scoreline in two games.
Let's start with the good stuff this week, because Serie A's first two rounds have been wildly entertaining. The big game was on Saturday night, Juventus-Napoli, and it was just a ridiculous game. Juventus 3-0 up and running away with it after 65 minutes, then pegged back to 3-3 by the 81st, only for Kalidou Koulibaly to score just an absurd own goal in injury time and gift Juventus all 3 points. It was a long free-kick forward from Miralem Pjanic, no Juventus players even attacking the ball, but Koulibaly went after it decisively like a good defender should, only to shank it off his shin and into the top corner of the net. So many subplots. Koulibaly had an awful game. Gonzalo Higuain, who contrary to all expectations seems to be right at the heart of Juventus' attacking plans, had a brilliant game. Matthias De Ligt started for Juventus and will likely be doing so regularly from now on after Giorgio Chiellini ruptured his cruciate ligament on Friday, but he had a shocker as well, at fault on all 3 goals that Juventus conceded. Erving Lozano scored and played really well for Napoli on his debut as well, so at least something to be positive about in there for Napoli as well. Juventus gets the international break on 6 points, as do Inter and Torino, who won a brilliant and bonkers game of their own away to Atalanta. Then we had the Rome derby on Sunday, where the two teams combined to hit the woodwork 5 times inside the opening 27 minutes, 6 by the end of the game. I think Lazio might be sneaky good this season and even challenge for the top 4 again, but Roma are just tons of fun to watch already under Paolo Fonseca, even though, or perhaps even because, they can't defend for Toffee. Sadly, it's not just the football, though, we need to talk about this week. Romelu Lukaku was racially abused by fans during Inter's win over Cagliari. Dismal, but also utterly predictable scenario, given that the same thing happened to Moise Keane at Cagliari last season, and Blaise Matuidi the year before that, and Suleiman Tari the year before that as well. So the club received no sanctions for the abuse of Keane last year, and Cagliari president Tommaso Giulini came out at the time accusing the media of false moralising on this issue. So whilst he hasn't commented on the Lukaku incident at time recording, sadly, you probably shouldn't hold your breath for any meaningful change.
Thank you, Nicky Bandini. In France, PSG go top with a 2-0 win at Metz. Eric Maxim Choupo-Moting scoring his 3rd in 2 games. Got injured, though. Rennes dropped to 2nd with their first drop points of the season. They lost 2-1 at home to Nice. Last season's runners-up, Lille, continue their mixed start to the season with a 2-0 defeat at Reims. And Monaco drew at Strasbourg, staying in the relegation zone. One more note from European football. Not a great start for Vincent Kompany at Anderlecht, started as player coach, got 2 points from three games, stepped down from the coach position. They drew again.
Well, he was forced to, wasn't he? He didn't have the right qualifications or something.
Possibly.
I think that's the truth of it. He doesn't have his licence.
He got injured in the next game. In the very next game, they host top of the league Standard Liège and beat them 1-0. Could he go back to City? Well, they got no centre-backs. You see Kompany lifting the Premier League title.
Well, that's not a bad idea.
Hmm.
He did do a speech, didn't he? He did a big speech. Mm-hmm. He's good at doing speeches. You can't take.
I mean, I think they'd rather have him back than Alaikum Mangala, who I see has joined the sinking ship at Valencia. He has gone to Valencia, hasn't he?
Good question. Here's an email from Innes McLeod. If each of the panel members had to take 5 penalties against a Premier League goalkeeper, how many do they think they would score? This has been a lively debate in my friend's group chat. Highest answer so far given is 2.
I would be reasonably confident I could get 3.
That's a Premier League goalkeeper.
It doesn't matter who the goalkeeper is if you take a good penalty. I think I would score all 5. I'm really good at penalties.
How?
What's your style? Are you a Graham Alexander or Julian Dix? What are you?
As I run up, I can visualise the ball going into the corner.
Okay.
And it always does.
All right.
I'm
when did you last take a penalty?
Probably a couple of weeks ago.
Oh.
No,
was Luis Bermorte watching?
Probably. He's always watching. No, I'd back myself.
How long have I got to prepare for this? Because, you know, I scored 4 out of 4 in the only league football I ever played.
Mm-hmm.
Admittedly, the 4th of those, the keeper got a hand to, the ball span up. I could have headed it over the line, but I knew if I did head it over the line, it would count as a missed penalty that I'd followed in. So I stood there letting the ball spin over the line.
I am 2 from 2 against professional goalkeepers. Manuel Almunia in a Watford training session and in a penalty shootout at Old Trafford in a kind of budget soccer aid against a former Marseille keeper in a shootout.
I've scored a volley past Evan van der Sar.
It's not the question we're asking now.
No, but if you're showing off, I don't see why I shouldn't.
On the subject of goal 3, Yellow Ball says, I'm pretty sure Mike Ashley funded some of goal 3. A Google later, in fact.
I couldn't believe that McInnes didn't realise that had been made.
Oh, I know.
It's awful. He plays for Mexico in a World Cup.
Paul McInnes.
Well, he might as well. It would be as convincing.
Apparently, Mike actually paid $3 million to be in goal 3. I'm sure the Newcastle fans will be delighted with that. Harry says, hi, Max. Barney uses the term dreaded to describe embargoes, the club Ben Stokes had his brawl outside. How would he describe other clubs on the Bristol Clifton Triangle, such as Lizard Lounge, La Roca, or Lola Loss?
Well, I mean, none of those sound. Lizard Lounge, would you like to go there? A lizard something that you want to lounge with?
I don't want to go to Lizard Lounge in Bristol, no.
No, an embargo, I mean, I've never been to embargo, but the descriptions I read sounded off-putting.
Well, does it bother you they chose to spell it like a Cameroonian footballer?
Very much so, yeah. And also, why would you call it embargo? An embargo is essentially a restriction on something, a refusal to engage. Why would that be the name of a nightclub?
Does that mean
you may as well call it sanctions. no trade deal. It doesn't make any sense. What's being embargoed here?
Anyway, that'll do for today. Barry, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Barney, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Cheers.
I'm away on Thursday. Faye Carruthers will be in this seat.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.